Chapter 5. The Pattern of Life. Early summer had come to our island. The days grew longer, and the rains were now gentle and warm. A mantle of bright green covered the earth, dotted here and there with blossoms, yellow, pink, and white. Fields everywhere were being plowed and gardens planted. The first really hot day brought with it memories of the beach, kids eating watermelon, of picnics and potato salad. Time was passing in a way I could not remember. Bill and I were busy building and gardening, and each evening brought amazement at what had been done during the day. Yet life had never been so easy, and each moment drifted into the next with a little thought. Into this reality stepped a man who lived in a life completely unlike ours. Indeed, he lived in a different world, the world of thought. One morning, I received a call from a man who identified himself briefly, saying that although I didn't know him, he had heard much of Sidney Banks and those near him. He had heard many good things, he went on, that many had found happiness through a method of teaching quite unique, that many had been healed of sickness, and that our organization was a growing phenomenon he wished to investigate. He added that he had a few days off and would like to visit the island and talk with Sid. We agreed to meet the next morning at the ferry terminal, and he thanked me profusely when I assured him I would contact Sid to arrange a meeting. Robert, my caller, was vague about his reasons for coming. Reasons I knew were meaningless, for he would be placing himself in contact with a source of purest truth. I recognized him immediately the next morning. He was wearing a business suit and carried a valise in one hand and an attaché case in the other. On the way to Sid's, he informed me that he had been involved in many awareness and spiritual groups. He had done research on still others and was thinking of beginning a group himself. We drove slowly through the winding countryside, and not once did he look at the incomparable vistas that lay on either side. His brow was furrowed, and he talked constantly, though quite fluently, of his intellectual accomplishments. He appeared to be a deeply tormented man. The very mind of which he was so proud seemed to hold him in an intolerable grip. "It sounds like you have been searching for something for quite a while," I finally said. He looked at me as if in disbelief that I would say such a thing, and hurriedly assured me that he was very happy, that he had already succeeded in the professional goals he had set for himself in life. Once at Sid and Barb's and the introductions over, we all settled comfortably in the living room. Robert immediately unsnapped his briefcase and took out an imposing sheath of typewritten papers and a few pamphlets. "These are a resume and some credentials I thought you'd like to see." He placed them on the table in front of Sid. Sid glanced at the enormous amount of papers and burst out laughing. Our visitor literally bristled and said quite indignantly, "Well, aren't you going to read them?" Still laughing, Sid answered, "I don't care who you are or what you have done in the past." "How can you possibly help me if you don't know who and what I am?" came an incredulous reply. Sid turned slightly, laid his hand gently on Robert's shoulder, and looked him straight in the eye. "But I already know you." "That's impossible," he sputtered in complete confusion. "How can you possibly know me? Why, we've never even met before." Sid spoke very slowly and distinctly. "Listen very carefully to what I have to say. Perhaps you will find what you are looking for. Mankind is energy manifest into form via a thought process. This thought process has a pattern, and every living soul must conform to this pattern." The mind of our guest had already raced ahead. "How does this pattern, as you call it, work?" "Just listen," Sid told him. "Just listen." It appeared this was something Robert seldom did. I had the feeling he had come not to find our views, but to expound at length on his own. We sat in silence for a few minutes while Robert stared steadfastly at the carpet. He then lifted his head, looked towards Sid, and said, "Go ahead." I received a picture of his computer-like mind compiling data on the present situation, revising his immediate method of operation, then flashing the go-ahead signal. Sid looked as though he might grin, but instead began to speak. The pattern has many pieces, and each piece being a fact. As you gather more and more pieces, the puzzle becomes more simple. Therefore, life becomes more simple and much more beautiful. If you find the source of this energy, you will surely find the secret of life and the mystery of the pattern you seek. The computer once again sprang into action. "Where is this source you speak of?" "The secret," continued Sid, "lies deep in the land of knowledge." "How does one find this land?" "This, my friend, takes courage. First, one must prepare oneself to see the golden chariot. Then perhaps some day it will take you to your destination." Sid told our visitor more of the golden chariot, which he often spoke of. Robert listened in silence for a while, then appeared to become impatient. "How far away is this land of knowledge?" he asked, as though he did not believe such a place existed. "Not far," twinkled Sid. "Not far at all." "How far is not far?" demanded the gentleman. He seemed determined to catch Sid with a question that could not be answered. "A blink of an eye away," came the reply. "Well, if everything is so simple, why don't I see it?" "Because," said Sid, "you are lost in the confusion of life via your mind with all its beliefs." This was simply too much. Robert became instantly angry, stood up, and began to speak. He told us of the knowledge he had gained by years of intense study. He had read widely and spoke knowledgeably of what he'd read. He did indeed have many profound truths, but I knew they were not his, but simply borrowed statements. He spoke of inner peace and self-realization, yet he himself held no peace. His face was desperately unhappy, and as he spoke, he clenched and unclenched his hands. He told of the security he had found by discovering exactly who and what he was. He spoke of spiritual illumination while experiencing total insecurity. A few words had challenged all his beliefs and left him struggling to sustain a frightened ego. Finally, after many long and painful minutes, he sat trembling and exhausted. He had tried valiantly to prove to himself that he too knew the secrets of life, and he had failed. Sid began to speak, his voice so gentle I knew he felt nothing but compassion for the man. "Knowledge," he said softly, "is not the memorization of words. True knowledge is an experience of this knowledge being a fact, an experience which must come from within yourself. When knowledge is put to the pen or spoken, it no longer remains a fact, but reverts back to a belief. This is why truth is hidden from the mind of man." Robert's voice had subtly changed, had lost some of its brash confidence. "Are you saying that all the words of wisdom written and spoken throughout the ages have been in vain?" "No, I'm not saying that. Although the written and spoken words are converted back to beliefs, they may be used as a guide to help you find the fact, to help you find true knowledge." Sid rose from his chair, disappeared into the kitchen, and was soon back with coffee. He chatted with his visitor for a few minutes about the island, and I could see Robert beginning to relax a little. We left shortly, and at the door, Sid held out his hand and suggested to Robert, "Have a good time. Have a look around the island and just enjoy yourself. Come back tomorrow and we can talk more if you like. Thank you, I'd like to do that, came the reply. We drove to a nearby motel where Robert would stay. I asked if he would like to join Bill and I for dinner, but he declined politely and added, I've got a lot to think about. Chapter 6, The Great Cosmic Fact. I awoke the next morning to find sun streaming through the window and knew it would be another glorious day. By 10 a.m. I had picked up our visitor and once again we headed for Sid and Barb's. If anything, Robert looked worse this morning. He mentioned that he hadn't slept very well, and I envisioned him lying awake till the wee small hours with the wheels grinding away in his overactive mind. I find Sid a very interesting man, he said. It's clear he's had some kind of illuminating experience. However, he isn't seeing anything new. I'm quite familiar with his ideas, although I must say his manner of presentation is unique. These are not ideas, I replied. You can be sure if Sid is speaking of something, he is speaking fact. I then related my own experience, the moment I discovered the difference between belief and fact. Long ago, I'd spoken to Sid about a problem I'd had. He replied in a few words, but I'd heard those words many times. I became impatient. Oh, I already know that, I'd said. Quick as a flash, Sid replied, You think you know it. In one amazing moment of clarity, I had discovered the difference between knowing and thinking you know, the difference between belief and fact. It was obvious. If I'd known the truth behind Sid's words, the problem itself would never have existed. Robert did not comment, and I knew he still believed the spiritual information he'd gathered to be truly his, even though it did not bring him any results. Minutes later, Sid and Barb greeted us at the door and suggested we stay outside and enjoy the sunshine. Although the sun was warm, the grass still felt damp with dew. We gathered the lawn chairs and sat quietly for a while, then Robert began to speak. I know you're trying to tell me something, Sid. I feel here a quality I've never experienced before. You all have a radiance about you, an intense feeling of life. I can't figure out what exactly it is. The trouble is, Robert, that you talk to yourself constantly and never give yourself an opportunity to see anything new. You see, there are two realities. One is the reality you now live in, and the other lies deep within. Both of these realities are a fact. The difference comes when you realize that one reality is a mind fact, and the other reality is a cosmic or spiritual fact. All things derive from this cosmic fact via a superconscious state. This superconscious state lies within every living person on earth. This is where you will find happiness and the secret of life. The difficulty lies with the mind trying to figure out how the cosmic world works. When you begin to see with clarity, you will see both realities as perfect. You will realize that 2 + 2 in the outside reality do not make 4 in the inside reality. If you see this as a fact, you will at that moment begin to find the secret of the missing link. You will begin to see what is instead of what isn't. What is the perfection of life in motion. What isn't is the mind seeing the imperfection of life, therefore creating an imperfect world. Remember, my dear friend, it is a world of thought. The thought is the cause, and the effect is the result of the thought. Think negatively, and the manifestation of the thought will create a negative life. Think positively, and the world you now know will turn to beauty. Robert nodded in agreement with this last statement. "I once read," he began, but his voice trailed off into nothing. Perhaps he was beginning to see. Sid continued, "You see, everyone looks for information to reach higher states of consciousness. This is the pitfall of the mind. On the contrary, all you have to do is raise your level of consciousness. Then the already known appears. And then you will see more of what is, as what isn't begins to fade away, truth being the victor." With this, Sid jumped to his feet and said gaily, "Let's have lunch." For the first time, I saw a big smile on Robert's face, and what a difference it made. He appeared more relaxed than I had seen him, and genuinely seemed to be enjoying himself. We all helped to prepare sandwiches and took them back outside. We ate, laughed, and joked. Robert displayed a quick wit and joined in the hilarity with enthusiasm. After lunch, he told Sid there was a question he'd like to ask. When Sid replied, "Go right ahead," he hesitated and finally came out with it, almost as if the question embarrassed him. "What about love?" I couldn't help but smile. He was so worldly, wise, and dignified, yet so totally innocent, one couldn't help but feel affection for him. Sid seemed not to notice his discomfort and promptly replied, "Love and understanding are the principle by which all things are created here on earth. When you lose this love and understanding, you are lost. This creates confusion in your life, which leads to stress, strain, and boredom. These in turn lead to still more serious problems. To find love and understanding, one must look within oneself. Here lie the treasures of life in abundance. To study other people's beliefs, concepts, etc., is really of very little value. All you learn is another set of beliefs with which to judge and analyze, adding yet more confusion to an already confused mind. Look within yourself. Then you will begin to see the true reality of life. This is how you will find your long-lost love and understanding." The sheer power of the truth of Sid's words was awesome. Unceasingly he told us, "Go within, go within." And for those who did, awaited the treasures he spoke of. However, at the mere mention of a confused mind, Robert's ego had once again taken control, and he changed visibly. Gone was the smile, and before us sat a very serious gentleman. "What do you mean within? Where else can one be but inside oneself?" he demanded. "Believe me," replied Sid, "when your level of consciousness rises, you will know what is meant by inside. Like all truth, it's unexplainable. All you have to do is listen." Robert stood up quickly, and I considered that talk of love and understanding was very dangerous territory for him. "I'd like to listen," he said. "I really would. Unfortunately, I have an appointment tomorrow and have to get back to the city. I've enjoyed our discussions, and perhaps we can exchange views again sometime." He thanked Sid and Barb for their hospitality and walked briskly towards the car. We returned to the motel for his luggage and then headed towards the ferry. He was very quiet during the drive and spoke again only when we had reached our destination. "I'm glad you have found what you are looking for," he said. "For me, Sid's doctrine is too simplistic." I looked at him, knowing what he meant. Like him, in the past, I and many others disbelieved the simplicity of truth. With warmth in my heart, I said, "It is beyond imagination. One must walk in the way to experience how easy it is, how easy it makes life." Once having accepted the power of truth, having surrendered to this power, there is no longer a necessity for taking thought of the hows and whys of one's life. From this moment on, truth truth will guide and protect. From this moment, we need only walk with ease and beauty throughout our days, knowing we have found the way. We said goodbye, and he walked towards the ticket booth. He looked old and tired, scurrying off to his next encounter. I knew he must be weary of the constant search. The laws of the universe work equally well for everyone, and Robert was no exception. Although he possessed a brilliant mind, he was simply not ready to hear truth. I felt that for a moment he had caught a glimpse of a new reality. Perhaps someday he would be back, perhaps not. "Good luck," I called, and he turned and waved. What a contrast his life was from my own. I felt not judgment, but deep understanding, for I too had once lived a life lost in thought. I felt so strongly the touch and the power of truth in my life. At such times I know I have discovered the way and that I am walking in it. I feel such faith as I have never known, for I am surrounded and protected by truth. If a thought should come I do not want, truth hastens to show it for its worthlessness. At every moment it is here to show the way I must live. To spend one brief moment in the joy and glory of this way is to know beyond belief that there can be no other. How grateful I am myself, my true self, has led me to a time and a man whose words, whose very life, is the sign sent that we might find the way.